The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. The Conversation Hour.
At abc.net.au/Melbourne and on your radio.
774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
If you were going to travel by road from Perth to Melbourne, what sort of vehicle would you choose? A nice, robust four-wheel drive or some super fast car to make the space, the distance shrink? Well, I don't know about you, but Neil Weatherson chooses a postie motor scooter. That's right, a postie motor scooter. That's how he goes from Perth to Melbourne. And not his own either. A group of, well, I'm not sure actually how many. It's 25 or 30. I'm getting conflicting reports. But about that, are doing it as well. And he's doing it to raise money for prostate cancer awareness. And he'll be speaking to me very soon on the Conversation Hour and also speaking to my co-host, Laurie Zion, who's here.
Funny story about about Neil Weatherson.
What's that?
Well, I was asked to come on the show the other day and it turned out that, you know, I said, oh, who the guest's going to be?
I'm not coming on unless the guest.
Neil and I went to school together.
Oh, really?
And actually, we have caught up quite a bit since. We've caught up at a school reunion last year. But I just keep thinking, I've been back in Melbourne for 10 years after living away from here for a bit longer than that.
Yeah.
And I do sometimes think, you know, Melbourne's changed. It's become a big, really big city and everything. But there are reminders every now and then of just how
unbig it is.
What an intimate place it really
is. Yeah, it can really be. And also our other guest is a comedian by the name of Russell McGilton.
Who I didn't go to school with.
Who you didn't go to school with.
No.
The city's not that small.
No, it's not that small.
But he's got a new show, Accidents Are Prohibited.
He's my neighbour.
Right. Well, we're all neighbours in some way, aren't we?
We are, indeed.
He's been
in Neighbours, apparently.
Oh, right. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we have to ask him about that.
I have to check.
But anyway, he's got a show that is about all sorts of hilarious aspects of travel, some of which seem very, very interesting, like being charged by rhinos in Kenya.
Yeah, and I think there's a bit of sex in Africa as well.
Well, I'm sure there is sex in Africa.
No,
there is a population in Africa. Oh, you mean for him?
Well, I think we have to ask him about that. Are you a good traveller or a bad traveller?
Well, how are you defining it?
Do you enjoy travel and do you travel well?
I love travel. It's like one of my favorite things to do. Like I could never be rich because even if I got a massive income, which I've not yet had the joy of experiencing, but if I ever did, all the money would go on travel and musical instruments. And that'd be it. So I love traveling, but do I travel well? I would have said yes, but I'm thinking no now. Because in the last couple of years, including just last week, I've travelled overseas and been really sick. Like sort of completely destroying the experience.
Not just the kind of ingrown toenail you get from walking.
No. And I'm wondering if the first time that I'm referring to, I was in Indonesia and I got really terrible sinusitis. And I don't think that was to do with being in Indonesia or anything. I think it was just that was coming and it coincided. Last week I got just this virus and then it turned into a bacterial infection and I had this incredible fever, like a fever I've never had before. And that was awful. But I think the thing with it was that I got the virus, but because I was traveling, I kept pushing myself. I had to go see this. I had to go do that and just ignore the fact that I was sick and then it got worse. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that answers your question. Or
rest days are hard to schedule in, whether it's holidays or work. I always find with travel that you ratchet up the degree of activity.
Well, because it's so expensive. If you don't, you're wasting time and money.
But I always find on every holiday or trip, I always need a day off from the whole experience. And I just I always find I just need a day where I don't really feel the need to do anything at all. And it doesn't matter if all I do is walk down the street. I don't try and, you know, see too much or do too much. I don't schedule it in, but it always happens one day of a trip.
But if you're away for only a week or something.
Yeah, that's not
You can't really afford that, can you?
No. I suppose weekends too. You know, if you just had a day of doing nothing on a weekend, you'd waste a weekend away.
I just think that a day of travel is worth a month at home.
Yeah, I agree.
That's roughly the ratio.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't sit around doing nothing for a month.
No.
You might have an hour or two when you're travelling where you decide, you know what, I'm not going to push it. Yeah. But that's it.
I was in Lisbon a few weeks ago, and I would have walked 20 kilometres a day
because
I just decided, I'm here, I've got a week here, I'm going to see the whole city on foot. I've always wanted to be here.
Yeah.
And it was just, It was just magic.
You have to do that.
Yeah.
I just think there's a certain magic about that sort of travel because you become an expert on the city like that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You navigate
Don't go down it, the, don't go to those cafes. Go to these ones.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And just like, you know, someone will mention a street name and you go, oh, yeah, 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 I know that.
It is funny because there were some German tourists there who were just talking about a place and I with all confidence, could say to them, really, I wouldn't go there. I'd try this place down the road.
That's a risk when you travel, actually.
Yeah.
You kind of get comfortable pretty quickly.
Get into a routine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's Lisbon like? I've never been to Lisbon. I've never been to Portugal.
Lisbon is a magnificent city, and I actually travelled around a bit in... I went to three cities in Portugal. I had a media conference to go to in a city called Braga. It's the third largest city, and it's recently become... It was formerly a cathedral city and really a very strong church centre in all of... You know, one of the big church cities of Europe, really.
Yeah.
But they set up a university there in the 70s, which is around the same vintage as La Trobe, where I teach. And they had a big international conference with 1,200 delegates, a media and journalism conference. And the university campus is immense.
Mm.
And actually, I got bumped from the hotel I wanted to stay in and stayed in this place that looked like the kind of hotel you'd stay in if you were spending the night at a Texan airport or something like
right,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I said, why have they put this enormous hotel right next to the university? And they said, well, the Center for Nanotechnology is down there. And it's a very big, sophisticated infrastructure.
Yeah.
But the one city, I'd say, if anyone has never been to Portugal and they get the chance to go, the one city not to miss is the second biggest city called Porto. It's on the north. It's one of the most fantastic, wonderful places to walk around. Got a great river frontage. And it's got one of the best music venues I've ever seen. It's just magnificent.
That's a very big
hall, very big, a very interesting concert hall that was designed a few years ago.
Yeah,
and just absolutely magnificent. And they've got a new light rail underground system.
Oh, that's nice.
Public transport.
Isn't
they
it
do
actually?
Well.
Can I say that's one of the most frustrating things about travel is you look around and it's like every city in the world actually has public transport. Like they actually do it. They have infrastructure and stuff. You know, like you go there and there's not just a city loop.
Yeah.
There's an underground network that
goes out.
With
the exception of 20 or 30 American cities I've been to.
Yeah, well, a lot of American cities are just tiny and not very big.
Yeah.
But, like, the cities that actually attract people.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, your New Yorks and your Washingtons and whatever. I mean, they've got quite vast underground train systems.
Yeah. In Portugal, it's slightly controversial because they've spent a lot of money on infrastructure since joining the EU.
Yeah.
And some people have said, well, you know, we really should have spent the money on other things.
Yeah.
But the fact is that Porto, which is a city of about a million people and which was probably in some form of ongoing decline for much of the last 50 years, has been revived. It's become a city which is... you know, taken off in terms of being a tourist destination.
Yeah.
And you just don't need a car to get around. You can get anywhere from, you know, within the whole metropolitan.
It's great when you have cities like
transport.
That. I think New York's a bit like that, actually.
New York
you
is
wouldn't
like
want
that.
A car in
New York's a European city on stilts, I reckon.
It is a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I know people in New York who sort of said, before 9/11 especially, New York wasn't America. Like, it didn't even talk about itself being America.
No.
You know, it was just, it was New York.
And I used to find it was the only place in the States you could go where we could be talking like this and no one cared about your accent asked you where you were from. It was just so uncool to
cosmopolitan
do anything
city.
Like that.
Yeah,
and I found it quite friendly, although I found it very funny there that I used to think the Woody Allen movies were in a kind of sense a bit like Dame Edna, like ratcheted up a notch above what people were really like, but sitting around on buses in
it
New
York, it actually is like that.
Yeah, I thought This is you know, these are documentaries. These aren't actually...
Yeah, yeah, it's not a comedy.
she should have married him when she had the chance.
especially when you go up the West Side. Now, what are you doing these days? You're running journalism program.
Yeah, the journalism program at La Trobe Union. We're about to start... I'm not actually going to be teaching into this, but we've just been joined by an excellent new colleague to launch a sport journalism degree that's going to kick off first semester next year.
Well, these are the broadcasters of the future.
Broadcasters, print, online.
Print.
It's going
to
be...
It's going to have to be... But you know the problem is that all the sports journalism jobs don't go to journalists anymore. They all go to former players.
Well, there's a lot of... look, there's a lot of players who work... I take your point, but there's a lot of players who work in sport media. But I think that when you look across the spectrum, I think sport journalism itself is actually one of the few areas in journalism where the job market seems to be relatively healthy. and where there's a lot of new opportunities. And
ghostwriters, I've just been reminded. Harriet, the producer, just said ghostwriting. That's the big, that's the growth.
Ghostwriting is big.
Yep.
And I think one of the things with online media, a lot of the smaller leagues and smaller codes and sports have started to be able to do professional newsletters and that sort of thing. So they're not all jobs in traditional media, but there's certainly quite a lot happening.
Jobs for journalists
across a range of different areas.
So this means that you spend your days hanging out with upcoming journalists. Teaching them. And that'd be great for a job like this because you just get them to do all your work.
Well, funnily enough, yesterday I was in a bit of a spot of bother because I've been having trouble with email. I didn't have very much detail on the show. So in the afternoon I got some notes about our guests.
Yeah.
And I had a class on yesterday for first year class called The Interview. And we had a two-hour tute.
I see where this is going, yeah.
And,
you don't have to admit this stuff on air.
No, well, I'm quite proud of it because the thing is that I believe very much if you're teaching a group of first-year students about interviewing that you should actually give them reality-based situations to deal with.
My reality-based situation was
that I said, we're doing some interviews tomorrow, and one of the guys we've got coming in is called Russell McGilton. Here's the press release I just got sent about him, and just got the groups to sit around and think about what kinds of questions could we ask. And I did promise that if they came up with good questions that we'd turn our discussion with him into a bit of a Q&A, like this question's from. And I've got a whole list of them here.
So you're actually just bringing in your students' homework.
Yeah, I've outsourced my research for today.
Despicable.
Yeah.
Despicable, Laurie Zion. So despicable, I've got to go. That's it. We're gonna stop.
Oh, no. I think it's good. But wouldn't you rather learn like that than just being told to read a textbook?
We'd get all your students to come in and co-host the show.
Would you like that?
Maybe. I don't know, would I? You know them better than me. Neil Weatherston, sorry, he's coming up on the show.
Do you want to know a bit about him before he comes in? From when he was...
Oh, has he got gossip?
Well, I mean, I grew up with him, so do we need to know...
I reckon save it till he's here, and then we'll hit him with it.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
lovely guy, Neil.
Here's what we know, all of the things all about you. Now that we've humiliated you, what would you like to say?
I've got a few things, and I didn't run these by my class, by the way. I thought it was very unfair.
That's all you. Okay. So anyway, he's going to be a group of 25 to 30 guys riding from Perth to Melbourne, raising money for prostate cancer awareness, coming up on The Conversation Hour. But next will be Russell McGilton, a comedian doing a new show about travel. Accidents are prohibited on this road, who isn't related or didn't go to school with Laurie Zion, but is my producer's boyfriend's sister's boyfriend's uncle. I'll let you figure that out.
On 774 ABC Melbourne.
My co-host that you've just been hearing from is Laurie Zion, filmmaker, documentary maker, lecturer and plunderer of students' minds for the purpose of interviewing guests when it really should be his job. That's right, he delegates to people unpaid labour. In fact, they pay you.
Well, they don't pay me directly.
Well, no, but this is the... we're joined now by a guest who I think has done some extraordinary things in travel. It's probably best left to him to tell us what that's about because he has a comedy show that deals with it. But he's not just done comedian. He's done... he impersonated Dr. Evil.
I think that's real. That's not comedy. That's too real.
That's pathos. and he's been Santa Claus on Melbourne Tram. That's getting even more real. Russell McGilton, welcome to the program.
Welcome. Hi.
I just have no idea how to introduce you because you've got a really, can I say this, a really odd bio.
Yes, the potpourri man, you could say.
Oh, really. That's good. Yeah, potpourri. That's very good. Now, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to sit back and do nothing, and Laurie's going to do nothing, and just simply get his students to interview you. Is that the plan, Laurie?
Yeah, well, I actually had a question that I thought of, if I'm allowed to ask that. Yeah. Well, no, I was just looking at some clips that you've got on your blog last night. You show that you're about to launch at the Fringe Festival in Melbourne. Accidents are prohibited on the road, which I didn't really understand when I saw the press release. This was literally inspired by a sign you saw.
Yeah, so I was. This is about my trip. The first time I went cycling from Bombay to Beijing, and one of the signs I saw in the Himalayas was this: accidents are prohibited on this road. I was laughing so much I actually crashed into the sign. But India is full of these sort of odd signs. There's another one I came across called Darling, I Want You, But Not So Fast.
Hang on, where was that sign?
That was also on the Himalayas.
On a road? Or
on a road, yeah. These are traffic signs.
Okay, accidents are prohibited on this road. I think I understand what they're trying to get. I don't even understand
the
intent.
I saw that in the clip, and it's done as a kind of joke. I mean, the thing is that these signs are funny because they are not meant to be taken seriously.
Yeah, they have these other ones.
They're a bit
like
the Don't Even Think of Parking Here one in New York.
It's a self-awareness thing.
So, yeah, I think it's this thing of it's a very long road and a lot of truck drivers. Yeah, and I think per day, 1,000 people are killed on Indian roads. They have very, very high...
Well, when you think about how many people there are there, that's probably not as many as we think.
Yes, and they don't
it's
seem
a lot,
to...
Waleed.
It is a lot, but there's a lot of roads and a lot of people in India.
Mm. Yeah. A lot. Yeah. So they have these signs, I guess, to try and keep them awake or amuse them. They have other ones like, better to be late than Mr. Lately. enjoy the beauty while on duty. And if it's not the traffic signs, it's the shops. There's one I saw called Child Bear. And I'm thinking, what does that exactly mean? And if you do the accent, you can get it. It's actually Child Bear.
Right.
Child Bear. So it's cold beer. And then the last one was Crack Detectives. Which I don't want to really go there, really.
Well, but, you just did.
No!
I mean,
you're going to hold me to task.
Well,
here,
you're
aren't
the
you?
One who raised it.
Yes, that's true. I did raise it. Well, yeah, and that's actually a architectural firm that looks for cracks in buildings.
All right.
So there's structural problems, but just seeing it at face value.
Yeah, you're right.
You go, oh, hello. Don't know if I need professional help for
that.
So
do you actually write your comedy shows, or do you just let the signs write
them for you? Basically just...
Hey, wait a minute. No, we're going to a question from Billy now.
Is it? Hang on a second. I get at least one, don't I?
Okay.
Just asked it, I guess. It's all over. All right, off you go. You can hand over to your students.
No, Billy wanted to know what came first for you, travel or comedy, and when did they start to merge into one thing?
See, that's good.
Very good. I've never been asked that question. Well, I've always loved doing comedy. But I also was desperate to get out of Australia. I grew up in Ringwood, and right. That's a good reason to leave.
That's why you were desperate.
That's why I desperately leave. And I thought this can't
Hello be. To all our Ringwood listeners.
Hello. I still hate Ringwood. So
right.
Bit strong, but yeah. It hasn't improved for me. So, I was desperate to get out of Australia, and I wanted to see the comedy scene. So I flew to places like Edinburgh and saw the comedy festival and just sort of reading, I guess, authors like Bill Bryson and Robert O'Hanlon, the Irish writer. It sort of fused those two together of actually trying to put the comic observations and turns of phrase and then taking the performance side into one-man shows.
But why travel in search of comedy? Were you already...
I wasn't in search of comedy.
Be...
It was sort of just really... I was 20 and I thought... I'd been working in computer sales. I felt my life ebbing away into this sort of adult world. And I wanted to really just sort of live life and experience things.
But there seems to be a comedic bent to your travel. I mean, if you're going to Edinburgh...
Yeah, there was sort of... That was the side issue. I had sort of festivals I wanted to go to. Not all of them were comedic. There was the running of the Bulls. There was... the Edinburgh Festival. I was going to go to the Tomato Throwing Festival, but it didn't sort of work with my schedule. But yeah, I sort of went there really to sort of research.
It's such an official statement for something like a tomato. Sorry, it's not going to work with my schedule.
Yeah, it's not going to work with my schedule, yeah.
So, I'd love to be there throwing tomatoes, but unfortunately.
Sorry, I'm fully booked. Couldn't make it. Yeah. So, that's where it went.
But I think what's really interesting from looking at a bit of your work off your website is that you actually get booked to go and talk in places like India, where, of course, you've collected a lot of the actual material. Do Indians themselves find this kind of take that you have quite funny when you present it
actually,
to them?
They're the ones that laugh the most.
Yeah.
Even with doing the show, when I'm doing Indian characters. And I was worried about doing the Indian voice.
The doctor who told you had malaria.
Yes. Said, congratulations, you're having malaria. Is this cerebral malaria, the kind of malaria that goes through it?
Yes, that's the one, yes. You're going to die.
So, it's funny. They have that very sort of laissez-faire kind of approach to your health. And he said, no worries, just stay with you and I will give you medication, you'll be fine. And sure enough, he was right. But he'd ask me silly questions like, where did your hair go? Because I'm bald. I go, well, it's on holiday. And he goes... No, you are bald.
Well, then why are you asking me?
Why am I the question? And he was going bald himself.
Well, that's probably why he asked it.
Probably.
It's playing on his mind. Yeah. Incidentally, I just got a text message saying Ringwood's happy that you moved out too.
No! All right.
Well, it's just an update from the suburbs.
Yep.
I'm just the messenger. Have you got another student for us?
Yeah, Amy.
How many have you got, by the way? Because we should regulate the time here. Are we going to get through them?
Oh, look, we don't have to get through all of them, but this one from Amy's pretty good. She says that she had a look and noticed you did a lot of public speaking around the topics of taking risks and fulfilling dreams. And Amy wanted to know if you use your comedy to showcase your message for inspiration, or is it the other way around, that you use public speaking to showcase your comedy?
Oh, it's kind of one... I haven't really thought about this.
The problem when you give it to uni students.
You go, they're always confused. There's two things going on in the question. I have an aneurysm. because they do actually have to sit through a lot of lectures, I think, and they do get a bit switched off to some speakers. I try and make it entertaining and funny at the same time.
Do you mean
time.
My lectures?
Yes, no, yours specifically, you're... actually.
Right.
Yes, they've already texted me. I think if you can break that, because I think boredom becomes that kind of that gate that shuts them off from taking anything on. Mm. So I do sort of aim for sort of, I guess, funnier stories. But at the same time, if the comic story is not fitting with the message, then I don't use that story.
It's not gratuitous.
Yeah, it's not gratuitous.
Right.
Mm. Yes.
Of course. What kind of public speaking engagements do you do? Who do you like talking to?
It's a real mix. I don't like speaking to lawyers. I had a terrible gig with a bunch of lawyers and judges in Bendigo where they listened to me for 5 minutes and then got more and more drunk and talked amongst themselves.
Oh, that's just legal practice.
That's just legal. They're just doing that anyway, aren't they?
Yeah.
But the best, I guess, I've had, students have been really, really good. They've always at first thought they weren't going to listen, but they're actually quite attentive. It's hard to say which one I prefer, but I feel quite relaxed in both.
Tell us about using a dramaturg for this show.
No, are you making this up now?
I'm just curious. You're doing a one person show.
Yeah,
but you're actually working with a couple of other people on it.
Yeah, the show I did for the comedy fest, and I was just sort of trying out the stories, and that was working with Alice Bishop. It was great in collating those stories, and I just thought the show needed more of a sort of a comic focus. So I've been working with Damien Callinan, who's got a lot of experience, 13 years of experience in comedy, and he's been great. Just finding out when to not shoot the story too soon in terms of making it too big in the beginning of the narrative and bringing that down to sort of something which is going to sort of have better payoff. So he's been very, very good at finding those.
Can you define dramaturgy for me?
Oh.
it's just something you put in the credits to sound like you're an artiste.
Yeah, it just sounds clever, doesn't it?
Yeah,
this came up in our class yesterday.
What's dramaturgy?
It's really the technical process of writing what's performed on the stage and giving stage.
Yes, so that's the strict definition. It's basically if they don't like what you've written, they say that's crap, write it again.
Right.
And you do. Mm. You try and work, or you don't. Or you say, well, actually, I don't agree with you.
That's just editing.
It's sort of like an editor. Mm.
It's not just editing. If you can edit well, then you can do a lot.
Yeah. Mm. Now, look, it's a very important part, actually. And if it hadn't been for Damien, I don't think the show would be as good as it is.
Like, this conversation hour took 4 hours to record, and you're just listening to the editor.
That's right. I'm surrounded by dramaturgs.
It's been dramaturgs.
Yeah.
One more question from Amy. Do you ever feel you need a holiday from travelling, given that this is the source of so much of your work material?
You have good students.
Yeah. These smart students, I tell you. Yeah, I do. It's like doing the Bombay to Beijing trip was exhausting, and I felt like I needed just a holiday to sit, in the sand by the beach, just relaxing. It was exhausting. I mean, in the other ones where you're traveling, what this show is actually about, it's about the first time I was traveling for the first time and getting to all sorts of trouble. I mean, I didn't actually travel in sort of like as a tourist, but like 10 months traveling through Africa or 3 months in the Middle East or in the UK. Yeah, that's not really so much as a holiday as such. Parts of it are.
But you do get very funny stuff from that, because there's the sex in Africa anecdote that when you go to the hotel one night.
Oh, yes.
And what was it, a 50-year-old woman who checked you in for the night?
Oh, yes. Can we talk about this story on air?
Yeah, I think we should talk about it. I think you should clear the air, having alluded to
what
it.
What does clear the air mean?
Well, what happened is I got drunk. I have to set this up. I saw this guy on the street picking his nose. This is in Nairobi. And this complete stranger.
That detail we probably didn't know.
Yeah. Didn't know. But he's picking his nose. And I don't mean just sort of a furtive pick. It was the finger was going right up and back and forth, like machine efficiency, like it was almost hitting his brain. And this complete stranger came up to me and tapped me on the shoulder and said, he is trying to change his mind. I thought it was the oddest thing. It was, I could just imagine him changing his mind. So, later that night, I was trying to pick up the hotel manager, and she didn't want anything to do with me. She's going, I don't want to go away. I said, what do you want? She says, I want traditional African men. I said, what's wrong with me? I don't like what you look like. So I got very drunk, lost the key to my room, and everyone had gone to sleep. And I bumped into the caretaker, Sophia, this lovely woman in her 50s with this incredible sort of snowball hair. And she said, not a problem, you can stay in my room. So I go in there, and then she locks the door, and she says, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to sleep in your bed with you because it's two single beds. Mm. And I'm going, I don't know about that. Before I can do anything, she's climbing in. And she's a big lady, so I'm swept up like the tide, and I'm sort of squashed up against the wall. And we're just lying there, and she's breathing fairly heavily, so this tension develops. She's... and there's a mosquito's outside the mosquito net. And she says, I know this is going to sound strange, but I have to take off my T-shirt. All right, so she does.
Have we played a warning incident?
It doesn't get too bad, really. Okay. Anyway, and so I'm going, okay. And she's lying there. I'm like, mm-hmm. Next thing she says is, I know this is going to sound strange, but I have to take off my underwear because I get too hot with it on. So she does. Off they go. Mosquitoes. And she says, I know this is going to sound strange. I'm going, what are you going to take off next? Your eyes, your lips, your nose? What? What? There's nothing coming on. It's just her. She jumps me. And I'm going, no, please. No, leave me. You are mine, Mazungu. You are mine. And I'm going to think of something quick. So I get my finger and I ram it up her nose. And she goes, ow, what are you doing?
Change
I said, I'm
mind.
Trying to change your mind. Yeah. See that coming a mile off.
Not a mile off, but just a little, an inch or two off.
Yeah, inch or two off. So yeah, those sort of experiences that... They're fairly rich in the.
Well, I certainly think that was in terms of material to work on the stage. That was a good night.
You don't even have to write that. That's written.
Just it's life.
We do have to move on. I'm sure there's a million other stories we could hear that would have.
That was a very truncated version.
The editors on tenterhooks. But thank you, for sharing that story. And hang around.
Yes.
Because we have other guests coming in, or at least one other guest, Neil Weatherson.
Yeah.
Schoolmate of Laurie's own coming in, who's riding from Perth to Melbourne. That's a form of travel. Probably doesn't involve people changing their minds in the way that you envisage.
No. But
I'm sure it has stories of its own. That's all coming up on the Conversation Hour.
On 774 ABC Melbourne.
My co-host is Laurie's own, filmmaker, documentary maker, lecturer, and all-around interview cheat. And my first guest was Russell McGilton, whose new show, Accidents Are Prohibited on This Road, think about that, is part of the Fringe Festival. We didn't actually say when it was running, 22nd of
Next
September
week,
to the
yes,
10th
Wednesday.
Of October. Yeah, are you running the whole time?
The whole time.
Right.
At Cabaret Voltaire behind the North Melbourne Town Hall.
That's going to be busy.
Yeah.
It's a lot of shows. Mm. Yeah. I suppose if you're going to go all the way to India and have strange encounters with large 50-year-old African women, it's probably... You need to make it count, don't you?
Yes. We live that every night.
Fair enough. Oh, really? Neil Weatherson is our next guest. He's what's the best thing? A schoolmate of Laurie's own, and is travelling by postie bike from Perth to Melbourne.
Coincidentally, a schoolmate.
Did you?
Yes.
I didn't know that Laurie was going to be here.
Did you know you were schoolmates, or is this something only?
No,
he
we
remembers?
Knew we were schoolmates. Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, we caught up at. We had a bit of a school reunion last year.
Yeah.
And Neil and I have both been quite diligent in going to high school reunions, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, do you go to them?
Yeah, I do.
Great fun.
Are they really? Do they become more fun?
You'll find that in it sounds terrible, but in private schools, the networking and the is far greater than in the public school
system.
That's
definitely
so
true.
The school that we were at is quite diligent in making sure that everybody gets an opportunity to go to a reunion, and they have reunions.
Opportunity, but this is the thing. It presupposes this is a fun thing.
Well, no, but it is an opportunity to have fun.
Right.
I really enjoyed. The first one I went to, though, was kind of strange because...
You don't recognise anyone.
No, well, the thing is that the 10th anniversary or the 15th or whatever it was, I got called up afterwards and by someone who said, we wanted to invite you to the reunion, but it was last week and we didn't know how to find you. And I just said... This is Carl, by the way, who called Eric Limbom.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And I said, how have you found me now?
Yeah,
so, by the time I got to,
they didn't want you there, Laurie.
They weren't counting that they were going to be dealing with such a forensic mind.
By the time I got to the first one I went to was the 20th one, and I did notice towards the end of the night I had been asked to speak, and I really had a few drinks. Like, I wasn't really in the right kind of frame of mind to conjure a speech up, and so I did that, and then what I noticed is a whole lot of people had disappeared, and there was an after party that I wasn't invited to. And I thought, it's just like school, you know, where I was not one of the cool kids. I was not one of the cool kids at school, and the same group were excluding me 20 years
ago. You know, that means, Laurie, that you really are a genuine failure, because the thing about school reunions is that the script is entirely flipped. Isn't that the point? That the cool group is suddenly what happened to them?
Yeah.
And it's the people who were the nerds who never had any friends are suddenly king of the world. Now, if you missed out on both occasions.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think there is a tragic dimension to this. But
clearly.
Double nerd.
I was very young for my year because, like, Neil, I remember your birthday was April the 1st.
Thank you.
Was 6 months. I'm 6 months younger than you. And I think that might have been it. I was just too young.
Too young.
Year.
Your parents wanted you out of home.
Yeah, exactly. They got that wish.
Incidentally, our producer's been listening and isn't buying your excuse.
She's not. All right.
I've actually, before we do need to talk about this bike ride, by the
way. Yeah, good.
But Matt Deneef is a student of yours.
Yeah.
Who's interviewed me in the past, I think.
Yeah.
And has just said that your use of students' questions is crazy stunts. Apparently you'll know what that means. Just letting you know.
Felt like a stunt.
And now we're having an old student reunion. People are texting in from your old school.
Who's there?
Hi, Neil and Laurie from Frank York.
Oh, g'day, Frank.
Hi, Frank.
I'm going to draw a line under this discussion because this is just going to get out of hand. Now, let's do this.
Frank York survived Cyclone Tracy. I remember that. Sorry, just wow. By. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, you can have a reunion show. Pitch
later on.
The station managers, and we'll go from there. The mail bag ride.
Yeah, mail bag ride. It's a pun.
M-A-I-L.
We're all riding posty bikes.
How do you get a posty bike?
You go to Fowles Auction and you buy them.
Really?
Yeah,
we bought
a job lot and they cost just over $1,000 each unregistered, so then you've got to get them registered.
Yeah.
The prostate is a bag.
Right.
And obviously we're riding from Perth to Melbourne, so the
mail. And you're not just mentioning the prostate just for the sake of it.
No. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
By the way, the prostate's a bad.
When the main fella who was organising this, a great mate of mine, I've grown up since I was 6 months old with Mark, when he started to organise this, someone said, why don't we do the ride for charity, seeing as though it's 30 blokes, 25 riders, 5 crew. And he said, let's do it for the prostate cancer. So we decided our charity beneficiary would be the Prostate Foundation, Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia.
So does that mean the ride came before the charity?
Absolutely, yeah.
So you just decided you wanted to ride?
We were originally going to ride from Melbourne to Perth, and then someone said, that's too hard. The sun will be in our eyes in the afternoon, so let's go from Perth to Melbourne.
Right.
And then
You've got the wind advantage there too. You know, you've got a tailwind.
The roaring
40s. Yeah.
30 blokes, yeah. And then it was decided, let's do it for a charity. And so we've made a course.
Actually, you know, this clarifies a lot for me because I've always wondered why it is when people want to raise money or raise awareness, they do crazy stunts. I'm going to ride from here to Antarctica. It's like, why? There's other ways to raise money or to, and now you're clarifying it's got nothing to do with the charity. It's just you decide, let's just do this. And then,
pardon?
What about selling snowballs that we did, you know, for the
skins? Yeah, exactly. Lamingtons.
Do that? Political correctness, not allowed to do that anymore.
What, Lamingtons?
Lamingtons and chocolates.
Why not?
No, you're not allowed to do it. It's bad for the kids that eat them.
You're allowed to sell them, not eat them.
No.
Have you ever been outside a chain hardware store on weekend mornings and seen what
Bunnings.
They serve up there?
Oh, I shouldn't say that.
The ailing sausages.
But so what you're admitting, and I'm grateful to you, it's helpful that you're admitting this, is that the stunt comes first, and then you search for an excuse to legitimize.
No, the stunt did come first, but then we thought if we're going to be doing it, we may as well be doing it for a cause.
Yeah.
And I think there's no greater cause than prostate cancer, especially the fact that 1 in 10 males is touched by prostate cancer, which means out of the 30 of us, unfortunately, at some stage, statistics tell us that at some stage, 3 of us will be touched by prostate cancer. Mm. The ages of the guys are 22 to 65. Ooh, so, you know, it is it's an extremely diverse age group.
How did you find the guys? Like, what was the...
We had to beat them off with a stick, literally.
So did you just put out a call for people?
Yeah, Mark sent out a blanket email, and we put the ceiling on 25 riders, and there was a group of, I don't know how many, sitting in the wings waiting for someone to drop off so they could get a ride in the 25. Mm. So it was really, it was the first with their donation of, each rider's giving $1,200 yeah. as an entry fee. $200 goes straight to the foundation and $1,000 in expenses.
Yeah.
And the idea has been that we try and knock off as many of those expenses through sponsorship and funding. But once you've paid, if you pull out, you lose your $1,200. And
it's
the next
a donation.
Yeah, it's a donation. So we're just trying to raise as much money along the way. We're going to have a faux postie box on the back of the truck. So when we stop at night, it's going to be dropped off and people can donate.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
So were you making a big fuss as you go into each town? Or like, how are you going to attract the attention to get people to donate?
Oh, they'll see us coming. Yeah,
big convoy of postie.
Well, 25 postie bikes flying along the Nullarbor at 70 kilometres an hour. It's,
I don't know if 70 kilometres an hour is flying along the Nullarbor.
Yeah, you might get over. Have you thought about just the actual, at 70 kilometres an hour, there will be some road trains possibly getting in your way.
We'll be in their way before.
Yeah, sorry, the other way around. But, yeah. Are there any? Have you got any kind of safety precautions so your convoy is
We do. Not... Yeah, we do. We've got... 3 vehicles. One will be an 8-ton truck, which will carry broken down bikes.
And riders.
No riders. And all our swags and everything, which we sleep in at night. We're doing it tough. And there'll be 2 utilities, one at the front of the convoy, if you like to call it that, and one at the back of the convoy. All of us will be in illuminated, the workman's jackets. So we're highly visible. And... hopefully the trucks will see that a long time before they see one of us right in front of them.
Mm. Is Australia Post getting involved and getting you to deliver some letters on the way?
I tried to get Australia Post involved and unfortunately no.
Really?
So if they want to, it's not too late. We leave on the
23rd. But see, the question was, are they getting you involved in their work?
Yeah.
No. Well,
do it like postie races.
I think along the way there's going to be a few little stunts that we have to do. Like the post box will be parked on the side of the road, and each rider is going to have to carry a whistle. And when we see the post box, we have to pull in,
like a Mardi Gras.
Indicate, pull in, blow our whistle, post the letter, and indicate and take off again. If you don't, then there'll be a fine. Little stunts like that. So. Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of fitness regime are you enforcing amongst your group before you take off?
It's a postie bike.
How am I looking, Laurie?
Better than ever. You've never changed.
I've actually ridden my bike in here today. It's not the most comfortable of things to ride. I don't know.
You know, you're doing a fair distance here.
We're doing over 10 days. We're doing 4,500 kilometres. So we're doing a lot each day. The first day's an easy day. I think it's only 281 kilometres, but the longest day is just over 500 kilometres, and there's a couple of high 400 kilometres as well. So,
and this is on an uncomfortable piece of machinery that probably isn't that reliable.
Well, no, they are very reliable.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, I hope.
right.
But have you got a motocycle licence?
Yeah,
you've ridden motorcycles before.
Yeah,
then.
No.
Right.
The day I got
have my motor... Have you thought this through? Are you sure you want to go ahead with this? Because...
I don't think I have. I think everybody else has thought it through. I just think it's going to be a great adventure and I'll be in there.
Yeah.
I think
I've got a feeling Russell can tell you about adventures, but see, he at least turns into a comedy show.
Yours might be a tragedy.
No. Oh, don't put that in. Just
a be line. Careful if someone says this might seem like a strange thing to say.
Yeah,
it's not your wife.
Yeah, no, it's it will be an adventure, and I think in the head it's a terrific thing, but once we get on that bike in Perth and start riding, we'll probably after day one we'll think What in the devil are we doing here? What,
have you got a whole lot of support structure, mechanics, all that sort of stuff?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mechanics, doctors, dentists.
Caterers.
Well, they're a part of, they're riders, you know.
Neil, catering, which I know is your, where you've done extremely well professionally. What are the arrangements and have you been part of that?
No. I've got a couple of the sponsors have donated food for the trip. And they're being held in a fridge, which will be in the truck, back of the right. truck. Most of the days, the breakfasts are being provided by the caravan parks that we're staying in.
So it's not going to be a travelling Weathers and film food festival or anything.
Goodness,
like that.
No. I'm there for the enjoyment. And I suggested that I could cook the breakfasts, and one of the blokes said, "You just have fun. There'll be too much mess after you've cooked the breakfast." So,
and let's get down to the business of it. How do people donate?
Okay, we've got a web page, www.mailbagride.org. There's three phone numbers on there, and if you could possibly ring one of those three phone numbers, I'm actually nicknamed Big Fella. That's been one of the hard things, is getting to know all of the nicknames. No one's called by their Christian name. It's all nicknames.
Well, you can't have a proper name.
Mr. Brown.
Not on a ride like this, no. And so, yeah, if you can ring one of those, we really are looking for sponsorship and funding. The main funding is being for the vehicles, the support vehicles. So if there's someone there that would like to donate for the to any part of it, because any funding that comes in is goes to the prostate cancer
and
foundation.
And are you donating? So you're donating to the prostate cancer foundation?
Absolutely,
that's,
yeah.
That's the body.
Yeah. Each rider, it's costing each rider between $3,000 and $4,000 to do the ride.
Right.
Because we've had to buy the bikes, we've paid our entry fee. There's all the spare parts, etc.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Sure.
We should just re-emphasize the spelling is MALEBAG.
Yeah, so that's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
And you've got a Facebook page as well.
Yeah, there's a Facebook, and that'll be updated daily with pictures.
So that's mailbagride.
Mailbagride.org.
Male being as in gender.
Yes. How much money is actually spent currently by the government on prostate research?
Not as much as there is on the female version, which is breast cancer. Prostate cancer is the male version of the female breast cancer, although males get breast cancer as well, and that's quite high. I just think that there needs to be more awareness, more money spent on this disease, because it's becoming more and more prevalent. And as we males just don't like going to a doctor for any sort of checkup, this one is probably one that we really don't like to have.
But getting 30 people to ride from Perth to Melbourne, not a problem. Laurie Zion loves the idea of banning newspapers. He's been my co-host. Hey, thank you very much. Russell McGilson, whose show, Accidents Are Prohibited on This Road, is in the Fringe Festival. Neil Weatherson, riding in a crazy expedition to raise awareness and money for prostate cancer.
The Conversation Hour podcasts are available every day. Log on to abc.net.au/Melbourne, click the podcast link and subscribe now. You'll never know who you'll end up with on your player. abc.net.au/Melbourne.